So I think what Cliff has suggested, that we somehow send out a call, generally broadside, for people to write up their own recollections of whatever they want to recollect, and whatever length they feel motivated to do so, and contribute whatever they can find in their files by way of historical material. I think that's very important to get that in, especially if Everett Volkers will be a custodian and archivist for the project, because that'll at least assure the development of a nucleus of a...
Absolutely.
Well, I think that it not to be just a broadcast invitation, could be that, but also then at least all of these people here, plus many others, ought to have personal letters urging them to do so, and urging them to do so by a specific time, as if they were getting personal invitations. Otherwise, most people will throw it away.
Yeah.
You're right.
And if it looks too much like a traditional questionnaire, they're also going to throw it away.
You can invite them to get on the tape recorder, too, you know?
Yeah.
They don't have to do it at their word processor. They can do it with their tape recorder.
We would welcome anecdotal material.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
Harder facts.
A lot of people find it a lot easier to just talk into a microphone than to sit down and type it in.
Sure.
Did we mention the people who are no longer here, but were here in those days, such as Bowen?
Bernie Rassel.
Well, we talked about all of them.
Remember Bernie Rassel?
Yes. Yeah. How do you spell Rassel?
R-A-S-O-F.
Yeah. I think story about Melvin?
We used to call him Bernia. Bernia Rassel. And he said, you shouldn't see my brother work you. Story about Melvin?
Melvin?
My Melvin?
No. Wherever he was before he came here, there was somebody he knew named Melvin who was in the library. He thought...
Oh, this you're talking about Bernie.
Yeah.
Oh, Bernie. Oh, yeah.
He saw this woman that he thought was Melba working at a library table. And he crept up behind her and put his hand over her eyes and said, Melba? Melba? But it wasn't Melba.
But that's true. There were... Have you been thinking of who? What names do you think of? People that were here already. Ralph Bowen is at Northern Illinois University.
Right.
Marty Fleischer is
Bob
at...
Bob Schneider's an old-timer. Really.
Bob Schneider came in 1960.
Oh, same time.
And there's...
Barry Gordon
was here from the beginning. He's at Brookhaven. And Ralph Bowen is at Northern Illinois University. Marty Fleischer is at Brooklyn College. Manny Chill at CCNY.
CCNY.
And these others who we mentioned, if they could still be located, Merrill Rosen, or Avenue.
I have no idea.
You know, Oster went to New School, and he became the dean of, he's now called dean of the college, but actually what it is that it's dean of the extension division, as distinguished from the graduate school, as distinguished from some of the specialized schools under New School.
Several years ago,
I ran into his brother on a golf course.
I was there. There was a...
He was there.
Cliff is referring to an occasion in Oyster Bay. There was a... Or maybe you're not.
Yes.
He was invited to speak, and he got up and...
Who are you talking about?
Alan Austin. And he got up and spoke, and he was still fighting the battle.
Yeah, I was so irritated.
It was amazing. I couldn't believe it.
You mean in this recent
about 2 years ago.
Before then.
So when they suggested this new one, I said, I'm not going.
I said the same thing.
Yeah.
I don't want to hear Alan Austin anymore.
Yeah, Say Sajishi told me. But I think he was again at this.
What did he tell you?
Yeah, he was at the last one. That's what.
Did he speak again?
Yeah.
And he fought the battle all over again?
Yeah.
I couldn't believe it.
Yeah. But this time he said that the great forgotten hero of the whole thing, which made him feel very bad, was
Leonard Olson.
Leonard Olson.
Leonard
Olson.
So he's fighting.
Where is Leonard Olson?
He went back to Chicago in an administrative capacity of some sort. He's probably retired by now.
I would imagine so.
How would you try to interview him?
Sure.
Not I, but you would.
Yeah. He wouldn't talk to us, I don't think.
I don't think I could interview him.
No.
Why does he have a health problem?
He had a health problem?
No. I was trying to...
Well, I think he took a drink after he got through.
Oh, Well, that I know. Well, yeah, I heard that, and I heard that he just collapsed, that sort of thing. You know, that I heard, but I didn't know that.
No time.
Yeah.
Well, he did get a job at Chicago.
Yeah, working that time for Levy, when Levy was president.
I saw him a couple of years after. I bumped into him in an elevator or something, and he was in Chicago then.
And he was not drunk.
No.
Yeah, I don't think he. I mean,
he looked okay.
Yeah. I don't think he went permanently alcoholic.
No, I think it was just right after the.
I mean, we all drank quite a bit.
Yeah,
something happened to everyone.
Man, those were a long night.
I drank for a lot in those days myself.
I'm glad you went back to the lab.
Well,
the guys couldn't believe it. I used to tell them the stories of what was happening. They thought I was getting exaggerated.
Let me ask you a question. Who's going to do the interview? I suppose beside me, do any of you feel that there are people who ought to begin on interviews with particular individuals? In other words, instead of one person, two?
There might be certain advantages of that, the way it sometimes spurs the conversation.
You can think while somebody else is talking.
Mm-hmm.
I'm getting a recording device so that I can call somebody and take down what they have to say. But that would be largely, as I see it, only a specific type of question, one or two specific questions that I want from that individual. Information that you can't get anywhere else. I'm going to take my time doing this.
Well, sure. I mean, this
it's
is
a
not
big
something
project.
You can do overnight. This
it's
is
a very big
it's
project.
An enormous project. It would be helpful if you could get assistance, there's no question.
Yes.
Frankly, I think, because it just becomes overwhelming.
Yeah, it's a lot to ask you to handle this all by yourself.
Sure.
It certainly is.
I mean, you know, some years ago when we talked to the history department people and began collecting stuff, they were already using some graduate students to help out. And I don't know if you couldn't talk to people or have the administration assist you in this.
You might think of someone, you might think of someone, or you might think of someone recently retired, too.
That's a good idea.
Ed Feast is a
possibility. Ed, yeah.
I don't see them.
They're still over there, I think.
The Faces?
Yeah.
Very much so.
Yeah.
Was
Natalie's
retired, too.
Yeah.
Was she active at the time of the Crystal Art Congress?
She was the executive secretary of the Crystal Art Congress.
She was
working out of my office.
She was the one who sent the Russians to the undergraduate.
I guess I've forgotten this detail.
They went out to the room assigned to them, turned out a couple of undergraduates in there.
There's a lot of anecdotal material, you know, that, gee, can fill hours of tape.
What kind of a history do you think ought to be written?
Well, that's a tough one. My own feeling is that it's something that really puts Stony Brook in the perspective of as a unique and a very interesting kind of development.
Education.
Post-Second World War development here in higher education. And I think it would be very interesting. It was instant at the university that was built, but it was...
Aren't we the Berkeley of the East?
No. You remind me, I was recently in Middle States. I was at Middle States team, and we were reviewing the Baltimore County campus, University of Maryland. And I met with a group of chairmen of various departments to talk with them and kind of I said, by the way, what? Because they had some statement they were going to draft a new mission statement and so on. I said, well, how do you conceive your mission? And someone said, we're the Berkeley of the East. So I said, oh, really? And then, you know, I don't want to embarrass them, say I heard that before. I said, by chance, has this expression been used by the president of your system? And someone said, yes. So I said, oh. They were puzzled. How did I know?
This is a Baltimore County.
Baltimore County is part of the University of Maryland system. It's a very interesting campus. Johnny is trying to build it as another type of Stony Brook.
He's going to outshine College Park? Is that
true? Well, the problem is that College Park is kind of built up, you know, to point you, very little else you can do. And Johnny's trying to develop, for example, areas in molecular biology, for example, and have it done there in Baltimore County. He's trying to develop some of the top-level work in some of the arts, you know, theater, so I'll do it right there in Baltimore County. Certain areas in dance, in English. He has a whole slew of things that they've been developing. And so what he's trying to do is get authorization from the state to offer PhD programs, of course, but he already has very ambitious targets, like 30% graduate students projected for the future, and everyone laughs.
So they can build a lot of space.
Exactly! So they can have the kind of buildings, and one of the things he's pushing for is to have, you know, remarkable buildings. So that night, one of the evenings, he hosted a dinner for the whole team, Johnny. And I was sitting there, I said, Johnny, I see you have not lost your touch. So he said, what do you mean? So I said, well, I think in terms of the fact that what you're doing Stony Brook, you find here, does that remind you of Stony Brook? I said, well, not exactly, but the fact is that he's trying there. He hasn't given up a College Park, but he knows he can't do very. It's all already set in concrete.
You're going to get Ed Pellegrino to help you go
medical school.
But you see, Baltimore, there's another campus, the Baltimore City campus, technically, consists of all the professional schools, yeah, including the medical school and so on. So that's a separate entity. Baltimore County.
I'm going to turn into a bumpkin.
Right.
Yeah,
long.
Yeah, I have a time to go.
8 o'clock.
Thanks,
an early morning
so
meeting.
Thanks for coming.
Well, thank you for inviting us.
Yeah, thank you.
It's been an enjoyable
it's
evening.
It's been nice.
I've forgotten a lot of it.
I know.
Make a copy of the tapes for us.
I know, that's right.
And I have to tell you one more episode. When I was coming here, we were living in Lexington, Mass., and we spent a lot of time real estate hunting. And we finally found just the house that we wanted over in Greenland. But we were given 48 hours to get a commitment from a bank, you know, and we didn't have any financial connections down here where we were against the wall. And I called Len Olson, and I had a brainstorm. I called Len Olson and told him the situation I was in, and I said, I know that Mr. Melville must have many banking connections. Do you think there's any chance that you could get him to help me? And guess what happened? He called Ward Melville, and Ward Melville went over and inspected the house in person, and called up the Security National Bank and told him to give me a mortgage. He did it in person.
Jesus.
I remember the play.
And yeah. Then at the closing, we got charged, and it's the $50 assessor's fee.
But I tell you, the first time we came to look at the land out here, we drove out, and Melville was to show us. Were you in that little group? We met with, Lee came out, and Lee turned to Melville. We went to Three Village Inn to have dinner, and Melville said, well, how do you like the song? And Lee said, oh, it's very nice, but you know, and they were giving us, what, 400 or 500 acres time. And Lee said, well, you know, it's not enough. We're going to need about twice that. And Melville's face turning all different colors.
Who said this?
John Lee. And,
oh, John.
And I realized, oh God, this political lack of political talent that we were talking about. And I could see Melville turning off completely, you see, at that point. Right. Expecting, you know, say, gee, it's wonderful.
Yeah, I'm so grateful to
that's
you.
Right. Instead, he's, well, no. We'll need a lot more.
Well,
I'll never forget
there was another occasion when we came out to take a look at housing for faculty. And this time it was Manus who showed us around. But Melville had suggested that this happen. And there were
five or six faculty members, and it was a long stretch of Cadillac, and we were wandering around and saw the 1.5 acre or someplace down there across, and the 1 acre places, and then the proper 2 acre, and then the 5 acre. The questions came up, what if, God forbid, there should be a black member of the faculty? And it turns out, no problem. Because during the Revolutionary War, and even before, there had been black people here.
They have their place
that they lived here. There were some of our most respected citizens, and fortunately, there was still lots of room down there. Likes to live with like, and so forth. So there was no problem there. And then somebody said, well, what if, God forbid, there should be a Jewish member of the faculty? And immediately, he went on the defensive and said, no. You understand, they when I say they heard there were some understandings in certain neighborhoods here about who you can sell your house to and stuff like that. He said, no, nobody can do anything illegal, of course. On the other hand, there's no law in the country that says that you own land, you can't deal with it as you want to deal with it, and so forth. There's one other thing he wanted us to know, and that was the time of the revolution, there were no Jews in the three villages. That wasn't very long ago.
But you know, that goes back to the early history of Brookhaven too, because I went to Brookhaven in 47, and there was a delegation went over. Ward Melville was building housing units, getting them built over in Stony Brook.
Yeah.
But they weren't letting any Jewish Brookhaven staff members buy them, and the delegation came over to discuss this with Ward Melville at that time, and that was his answer.
It wasn't Manus.
Wasn't Manus. It was Ward Melville himself who said, "Well, this is a reconstructed revolutionary time town," and he didn't say there were no Jews. He just said we're trying our best to keep the population in the same proportions as it had at that time, and that was.
Oh well, then that's all more understandable.
It goes back. You notice that Brookhaven, the center of gravity of Brookhaven immigration was all South Shore.
Yeah, that's interesting.
South Shore?
Yeah. Everybody settled in, you settled in Belport, didn't you?
Saville,
Blue Point, Bayport, Belport.
There was a delegation from Shoreham. It depends on what sort of
voting. It's not a very small one.
Not certain business managers.
We lived in Medford. Can you believe that?
That's in the middle of nowhere.
In the middle of nowhere, a suburb of Patrick. The house that we lived in is now on the edge of the Long Island Expressway. I can't believe it when I drive by it.
It's handy to get in the motor vehicle.
It's really in the back woods.
Yes, sir.
That was nice.
I'm glad you're doing this project, Colonel.
Yeah.
Very important.
I think it's desperately needed.
Get that tape machine going. Well, Carl. Take this case.
Is it raining? Yeah. Okay, good night, Carl. Take care, Carl.
People didn't.
Oh.